Good afternoon, everyone. This is Golden Bold, the sound of Laurier Sports. My name's Ian Bailey, so thank you for, it's just me in the studio. Thank you for joining in. Typically, we have other co-hosts. Typically, we have callers, too. A lot of them canceled. We had a couple co-hosts couldn't make it. A couple callers can no longer call in. So it's probably just be my voice for the next hour or so. So glad you can tune in. It's always a good time here. We discuss campus sports here on Golden Bold. We talk local sports. We talk professional sports. We talk happenings going on in the sports world. Again, glad you can join us. Maybe just listen to the radio and suddenly my voice hops on. Hopefully you stay on. Sorry for interrupting your music. Your music will return later. But now it's time for some sports for January 24th. The men's hockey team for Laurier. Laurier Golden Hawks men's hockey team in action. Yesterday morning, Thursday, 11 a.m. puck drop. Atypical time for a hockey game, but a fun time nonetheless because it was a school day game. What's a school day game, Ian? School day games when they bus in all the local elementary, you know, public schools. And they bus them in and they get like the afternoon off school and they come in with signs and pep. And it's an incredibly busy time, incredibly high energy. I understand how children that small can have so much energy in them as it was over 3,100. 3,100 people in the rec complex to watch your Golden Hawks. And they did not put on a show. The visiting Waterloo, Battle Waterloo. So it's great to have Waterloo schools in because Laurier and Waterloo, two schools, two universities in the Waterloo region. And oh boy, the Warriors just scored and then kept on scoring. It was 4-0 Warriors, and it was a disappointing showing for the Golden Hawks, but for the men's hockey team on campus, it's been a disappointing season, to say the least. And I can be a bit more crude or a bit more, you know, opinionated here on the sports show. Can't really, I was commentating the game yesterday, and it can't be too negative, you know? So instead of just being negative on the Golden Hawks, just be more, you know, complimentary of the Waterloo Warriors, because they did play a great game. But here I can kind of let my true feelings out and don't have to worry about, you know, live professionalism. The Golden Hawks just played a bad game, and almost every single Warriors goal was off defensive turnovers, off of defensive mistakes, off of careless and unnecessary plays by the Golden Hawks, mainly defensive line. There were some offensive turnovers too, but offensive turnovers don't bite you as much as defensive turnovers. If you're going to turn over the puck, you want to turn over 200 feet away from your net, not 2 feet from your net. So offensive zone turnovers, no one likes turnovers, but they're going to happen, especially when you're trying to make something happen, make a play happen. Maybe try to force a pass when it's not there. Offensive zone turnovers happen. Where the problem is defensive zone turnovers. And the Golden Hawks just had an absolute slew of that. The game was littered with that, and I'm surprised the Warriors didn't put up more tallies. Warriors won 4-0. Golden Hawks did not put up a single goal, and of course it was me along with Dan Polischik of the athletics department on the important people part of the athletics department. He was on the call with me too, and we were trying to kind of find something positive to say about the Golden Hawks. And you know, we're like, oh, you know, great crowd. You know, hopefully some of these young kids, they turn out to be Golden Hawks fans. Hopefully this game, you know, inspires them. And it's hard to kind of run that a storyline if you don't even score a single goal and you get shut out on home ice. So a very disappointing showing from the men's hockey team, but it's been a disappointing season for the men's hockey team. Only 4 wins on the season. They're 4-14 or 4-15-3 now from that loss yesterday. They're bottom of the West Division. They're second last overall in the OUA. They've only won against Brock, RMC, York, and Lakehead this entire season, of course. Only one win in the calendar month of January. That was the Lakehead win. And again, they're second last overall in the OUA. First last in the West, of course, second last overall. Last overall is just the one win from RMC. And they have 11 points. They're way, way out of the playoff picture, looking to salvage something out of the season. They're not mathematically, the men's hockey team isn't mathematically eliminated yet. For them to make the playoffs, though, it would require every team above them to never win a game again, ever. So basically kind of like, you know, the Buffalo Sabres of the NHL is our men's Golden Hawks. And it's a shockingly poor season compared to last year. Yeah, you lose a great starting goaltender in Christian Propp, who was a star of last season for the Golden Hawks. But this season, you still had a lot of returning players. You still had a lot of impact players. Patrick Brown, Sam Rhodes, Isaac Suklo on the D-line. Kilborn getting the A this year on the D-line. Now Leonard there on the top line too. And this was a team that was a playoff team last year. They won the wild card game, and they got into the playoffs last year. Of course, they eventually did bow out. But this Golden Hawks, you expect them to be around that wild card game, that 5-6-7 range out of 10 in the West, and they're 10th in the West. They're last, and they haven't really been anywhere close to the playoff line since the start of the season. And it's the story of the season has been careless defensive turnovers. Sometimes it looks like it's a team of entirely Justin Halls out there. Leafs fans, you know what I'm talking about. And they're also incredibly undisciplined, too. They're the most penalized team in the league. They have the most times on the penalty kill with a man advantage when you get taken off for a penalty. And even last game, like it was a hard-fought game. It was a chippy game. I like seeing chippy games. I'm not anti-penalty. I'm not anti-rough housing. I like that. When I played sports, I was often kind of a bit of a gamesmanship guy, too. So I enjoy the game within the game, and the chirping and the roughing and the after-whistle extracurriculars. I enjoy that. But there's an art to it. There's a method to the madness, and there's no method when they engage in madness. It's just madness. Other teams, Warriors, they engaged in chippy game, too, yesterday. But they knew when to back out of scrums, and they knew when to goad people in. There was a method to their madness. The Golden Hawks have no method to their madness, and as such, remain heavily undisciplined, take a lot of careless penalties, a lot of ill-timed penalties, and when they play 5-on-5, it's turnover galore. And that's not to say, I don't want to say they're a bad team, because that's a bit dramatic, because they have one game, and they've also lost some close games, and there have been some games I've called which they've played well, but yesterday they just did not play well. They had their chances. Not saying they were completely stonewalled. They had their chances, but Nushka, the Warriors goaltender, fantastic game. His second shutout in a row. And Nushka was playing well. He saved, 48 for 48 shots. But the Golden Hawks, they had their chances. When they finally had good chances, Nushka was there. Or they also just missed the net. Like Bobby Uecker would say, just a bit outside as... they missed the net a lot of turnovers, and a men's hockey team for the Golden Hawks on campus just not getting it done when they need to. Moving on after that bit of a men's hockey team rant, I was holding on to that, I guess. It's a bit of an expression of distaste for the Golden Hawks season. The women's hockey team doing much better. They're 11-6-0-1. They're good for 30 points. That's fourth in the West comfortably. Fourth in the West. Of course, they played last weekend at home versus the visiting Western Mustangs. Of course, they won that 5-1. And they also played tonight at Western. So they played home against Western, and now they go into Western to face them. They play tonight. Of course, Western is below them in the standings, especially in the West. They're 7-11-0-1, good for 20 points. That's last in a rather packed or tight West conference. Of course, they play tonight at Western and then play tomorrow night in Windsor against the Windsor Lancers, who are 11-4-3-1, 34 points. So 4 points ahead of the Golden Hawks, good for third in the West. So you have fourth in the West versus last in the West tonight, and then you have fourth in the West versus third in the West tomorrow night. So it'll be an interesting weekend to see how they fare. If you're looking for varsity sports playoffs to watch, women's hockey will be most likely, if things stay the course, will be in the playoffs. Men's basketball and men's hockey aren't, unless again every team ahead of them, you know, just loses everything ever. Then it'll just be women's hockey. Men's basketball and women's basketball also might be in there. Of course, a couple weeks ago, I was saying, like, if you're looking for a playoff, you know, Laurier sports to watch, you know, keep your eye on women's hockey. That's probably likely the only team that'll make it to the postseason. But women's basketball, men's basketball, I've been on a run, lady. Women's basketball, they have a 3-game win streak going on for the women's basketball team here at Laurier. Of course, Algoma came to town last weekend to face both women's and men's basketball programs. And Algoma's basketball teams aren't very good. I'll leave it at that. The men's team hasn't won this season. They're 0-14. That is 0-14 is like a mid-80s Neil Young album. It's just not a good record at all. The women's team has won once for Algoma Thunderbirds. So combined women's and men's basketball teams, they've won once this entire season. So you'd expect the Golden Hawks to win their pair of matchups last weekend, and they did. Women's basketball, of course, 81-63 that Friday night, of course, capped by Janet Engie's just absolutely terrific performance. And then they also won the next night, 85-48. So of course, that's two wins. And then they won previously this earlier this week, 72-50, visiting UFT. So they're riding a 3-game win streak with two wins against Algoma and one win against the UFT Varsity Blues. They play tonight. Women's basketball play tonight. Play tonight versus Waterloo. That's also at the athletic complex. So that's right on campus. If you're looking for to watch some basketball, head on over. For women's basketball, they take on the visiting Waterloo Warriors, University Ave rivals, tonight at 6 p.m. Laurier has improved to 7-8. Waterloo's 6-8. This is a battle of 4-5 in the Western Division of OUA women's basketball. Men's basketball on tap for Laurier. They play tonight as well versus Waterloo Warriors. Women's play at 6 Athletic Complex. The men's play at 8, also at the Athletic Complex. A bit of a 2-for-1 if you want to go over and watch some basketball on a nice Friday night. Of course, men's basketball also had a 3-game win streak, but that was cut short by their visit to UFT earlier this week. So women's basketball riding a 3-game winning streak into tonight's game. Men's basketball coming off a 3-game win streak, but having lost the last game to UFT on Wednesday. Of course, their 3-game win streak was started by 88-73 win versus the Lancers before Algoma came in, and then Algoma came in last weekend, and they put up 105-60 over Algoma. They crossed the century mark there, as Algoma's average points against for the men's team is above 100. Algoma Thunderbirds, what a program. And then Laurier decided to take their foot off the gas pedal the next night, Saturday night, this most previous Saturday night, 69-37, which, again, a very low-scoring game. To drop 105 on one team, they only managed to get 69 the next night. They're taking it easy. Definitely the word in that locker room was just, take it easy. We know we can probably beat them. So just take it easy. You know, relax. Don't push yourself. Let's save us up for UFT, which they did lose earlier this week. Laurier 6-9, the men's basketball team coming into tonight's game. Waterloo, the visiting Waterloo Warriors, who they're facing, is 5-9. So Laurier and Waterloo, both women's and men's basketball teams, pretty similar in the standings, pretty similar records. Of course, in both instances, Laurier only having one win over Waterloo. Women's Laurier 7-8, Waterloo 6-8. And Laurier men's 6-9, Waterloo men's 5-9. And those men's teams are 3-4 in the West. Laurier and Waterloo, twins in the standings, twins in the record, as they're right by each other. 3-4 in the West for men's, and then 4-5 in the West for women's. So if you're a Warriors fan, or if you're a Golden Hawks fan, it'll be a great, great matchup, very tightly contested as the season heads into its home stretch. And teams need points, teams need wins, and only one can do that. We'll see which one ends up on the winning side of the score sheet tonight. Moving on from campus sports. Actually, before we move on to campus sports, we will just do a quick look around Laurier campus on other sports just to see if there's anything I missed. as we load up the old website here. Of course, Taylor Algersma, I forgot the football news. Taylor Algersma becomes the first U Sports quarterback invited to the Reese's Senior Bowl. Of course, that's in the States. Taylor Algersma getting notice and getting invites across the border. The cheerleading team was for Laurier was in action. International Cheerleading University Games. And of course, as I mentioned, Jana Engi, the women's basketball player, named Laurier Athlete of the Week, had an incredibly 30-plus point performance against Algoma. And of course, the other Athlete of the Week, Wyatt Wright from the men's curling team. Of course, both curling teams now in action as we hit the winter season. And that's about it for campus sports. Maybe I'll get reminded of something after. That being said, moving on to professional sports now. And I'm a big hockey guy. You know, hockey guys, I'm a big one. And the Canucks, of course, Canadian team, Vancouver Canucks. Everything that can go wrong is going wrong for the Vancouver Canucks out of British Columbia. It's been a rough stretch for if you're a Canucks fan since about December, early December. Of course, you had Elias Pettersson, JT Miller. I'm sure every Canucks fan is tired of hearing about it. But it is a very interesting story. I think I mention every week on the show just how, you know, kind of unorthodox and strange this story is, because we've really never seen anything like it, at least recently, where such a public conflict between two star players, and where it's kind of reports saying basically inconsolable, and the team's looking to get rid of one of those players, looking to trade one of those players. And over the past week or two, it's been clear that JT Miller, if the Canucks are going to move one of those two feuding players, it will be JT Miller. And JT Miller, again, has the more movable contract. He has a no movement clause in his contract. He has to approve any trade, any roster movement he is a part of. But he has a lesser contract, and he is the older player. And Elias Pettersson, his production's not where you want it. Simply not where you want it. But he is getting paid the big bucks, and he is, you know, I think just 25, 26 years old. So he still has a lot of time to improve and get back. And it would just be quite a strange, and, you know, any trade where they trade Pettersson, they would lose that trade. Because Pettersson, like, he's such a good player, such a talented player, that he will bounce back from this. And so you can't really get rid of him. He's too good not to come out of this slump. Miller, of course, making $3 million, $3.5 million less than Pettersson. His production is about just a bit less than point per game, which is better than Pettersson. And that's where you kind of expect him. Like, he's not lighting the world on fire like he has in seasons past, but his production hasn't been awful. And perhaps some people would kind of want you to think it's been bad because it makes it easier to trade, but his production hasn't been awful. But he, out of those two, he is probably the one to get traded. And there's rumors of him landing at the Hurricanes down in Carolina. There's rumors of him with the Rangers. Islanders were in the discussion. I saw Sabres, too. But very likely, rumor has it that he wants to go to the Eastern Conference, and he wants to go to an American team. Sorry, Canadian teams. But Canadian teams across sports do struggle attracting players in roster movements in their favor. We've seen that at MLB. We might talk about that later. NBA and NHL, we've seen Canadian teams struggle to attract big market names, and whether that's due to the media in Canada, whether that's due to the, I don't know, this is stuff like the finances, the Canadian dollar, and higher income tax rates in places like Ontario, rather than, you know, the more lax tax locales in the states, such as Florida, notably. Sorry, I just lost my train of thought there for a second. If you can't tell, I didn't really prepare for this. Well, no, that's wrong. I did, but then as soon as I got into the room, we were running late, so I just went right on air without, like, looking up anything. So, nonetheless, Miller probably on the move. Elsewhere for Canadian NHL teams, the Flames won last night 5-2 against the Sabres. Which you expect basically any team that goes against the Sabres to win against the Sabres. And Flames, guess what? They won against who? The Sabres, 5-2. Great showing. Their goaltending, Dustin Wolfe, rookie, is doing absolutely phenomenal. Should be in the Calder Rookie of the Year trophy conversations. Of course, goalies don't quite get that. And Calgary's not the biggest market, so they also don't quite get that. Same respect, of course, Rookie of the Year. You're looking at Celebrini from the San Jose Sharks. You're looking at Mishkov, maybe gets production back up from the Flyers. You're looking at Lane Hutson. He's my pick. Lane Hutson of the Canadiens, the Montreal Canadiens. He was just doing absolutely phenomenally from the defense line. He's top three in rookie scoring. He's out on the penalty kill. He's out on the power play, both first units. He gets a lot of ice time. He has some silky hands, too. Makes some nice, pretty plays. I'm a big Lane Hutson guy. He makes some defensive, like, gaffes, but he's also, like, a rookie. And I like him, so I'll give him a break on those. But Dustin Wolfe from the Flames should also be in those talks. And I would love to see Wolfe win it, too. I would love to see Hutson or Wolfe really take that home. Hutson, of course, will get the more of the conversation because kind of came out of nowhere, and he is a skater. He's a defensive line. He plays both offense, defense, power play, penalty kill. Goalies, Dustin Wolfe has had some experience before. He's still eligible to be in the Rookie of the Year nomination. And he's also, again, a goalie, and goalies, you know, do suffer losses. And I think, oh, well, he's lost a couple, you know, it's a weird thing with goalies. Goalies very often aren't considered for non-goalie awards. I think the last time MVP, the Hart Trophy, went to a goalie was like Carey Price 12-13 years ago. And there's only been a handful of goalies to really ever win non-goalie awards. Rookie of the Year, occasionally. I think Rick DiPietro might have won Rookie of the Year back in like 2000. That was a goalie. And then Jose Theodore, I think, maybe won MVP, and Patrick Waugh and Dominic Hasek won MVPs. But really, since maybe the 2005 post-lockout, so 05-06 season, I think the only goalie to win, an MVP was Carey Price. So goalies very often not considered for non-goalie awards. I would like to see Dustin Wolfe get considered for Rookie of the Year. Of course, the Leafs were also in action earlier this week. They dropped it to Columbus, who, let's talk about the Blue Jackets for a second. Are having an absurdly strong season, especially since about maybe late November, early December. The Columbus Blue Jackets, who were predicted to kind of be around the playoff line, and then are firmly kind of in the conversation. You didn't think they'd be last in the league. We didn't think they'd be, like, especially in a strong Eastern Conference. But that strong Eastern Conference that we all thought was going to be strong going into the season is no longer strong. It's quite weak. For some teams, of course, teams, you know, your perennial Leafs and Panthers and Devils and Hurricanes, they're all in the mix. They're still on top of the East. But people like the New York Rangers are out of the playoff line, near the bottom of their division, near the bottom of the conference. It's just shocking to see how far the Rangers have fallen down. Penguins are getting older, and you're looking to see if Crosby, Malkin, and Letang can kind of find that spark. And again, Crosby is timeless. He's still doing really well this season, but they haven't been able to catch up. And you think the Penguins are probably a wild card team. They look like they're getting out of that race, and they'll need something to turn on quickly to keep up in that wild card playoff line. Again, not Crosby's fault. Crosby is amazing. Tristan Jarry, the goaltender, has been very weak. He's getting paid $5 million a year. He's been put on waivers, sent down to the minors, I think, once or twice this season. So just not what you want to see out of a starting goaltender who makes the big bucks. So Penguins and Rangers pretty well out of the conversation. Senators are trying to keep their way in it. Canadians had a strong push lately. They're trying to keep their way in it. And really, it's Columbus who has maintained. Again, Canadians went on a run. Senators went on a run earlier this month. But Blue Jackets are the one who's still on that run. And Blue Jackets look like a they're making the playoffs if they can keep it up. And also, they're a dangerous team. And also, they've beaten strong teams on this run. So they look like they're a very well-structured, very disciplined team who can be dangerous in the playoffs. They look like a strong playoff team. And it's strange to say that when there's teams not on top of the standings to say that they're a strong playoff team. But that's what happens. And I'm sure if you're a fan of, you know, NFL, NBA, MLB, you look at those teams that are not on top of the standings, but you know they're going to be hard outs, which, you know, hard outs of the playoffs. It'll be hard for a team to knock them down in a 7-game series or in a one winner-take-all NFL game. You can just kind of tell those teams, again, they're not flashy. They're not getting all the wins that you expect. They're not on top of the standings, but they're going to be a hard out. You're going to have to really fight to knock them out because they're so passionate, so disciplined, so structured. And come playoff time, that's really all that matters. They're defensively sound. They've got a really harsh, strong forecheck. They can really clog up in that neutral zone. Those are the type of playing that, you know, might not get you all the wins in the regular season, but you're a team that can really perform in that playoff style of competition. And Blue Jackets kind of look at that for me. I think they might be dangerous come playoffs. I don't think they're Stanley Cup champions, favorites. I might say this week, and then 2 weeks from now, they might be out of the playoffs after dropping 6 in a row. But I think if they make it into the playoffs, I can see an upset win in the first round. I can see them pushing the second round to 7 games. I can see them making it a few rounds. So I think the Blue Jackets are and might be a dangerous team. Are they able to keep it up? That's the question, though, because they haven't really been in this position for the last couple seasons. So if they're able to keep it up, then I have faith in the Blue Jackets. Again, not to go all the way, but the Blue Jackets might be dangerous, as we actually might have a caller. I'm going to organize that, so there might be periodic pauses in my talk here, but we might have a caller soon. I need to get that set up. I thought it was going to be my voice for the next, like, 20 minutes, and you guys would just have to deal with it, but we might get another voice in here, so that's always nice. I can't spell. I say, are you good to go? And it's, I think it typed out, are you good night, grandson? I love spell check. I wish I could spell. I'm 21 years old. I can't spell. It's okay. I'm with you. It's all right. We are going to try and get this all set up here. So I'm going to put some soundboard on for you. That's probably my favorite. If I had to pick favorites, that would probably be my favorite. I forget what this one is, though. Oh, there we go. This is quality sports content. This is quality radio content, too. Jack, give me show of the year. As I find my way to plug things in, it turns out, are you good night, grandson? He responds, what does that even mean? How does he not know what that means? That is, you can't just read my mind. If you could read my mind, love, what a tale my thoughts could tell. Like an old-time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. And a castle strong. Gordon Lightfoot, we love Gordon Lightfoot here on the show. We've talked about Gordon Lightfoot on the show. We've suggested that Gordon Lightfoot and Stompin' Tom Connors both notably have passed away, should have a halftime show on this radio show before. So that's what we call in the industry a callback, as we are going to take a caller if it goes through. And if it goes through, I'll introduce him. But if he's not, it doesn't go through, we'll just pretend it never happened. That's loud. All right. Good to see it's working. I'm waiting for him to see if he joins the line. If he doesn't, then we'll move on from NHL. And we'll talk about NFL playoffs and MLB, well, not MLB, the Cooperstown, the Baseball Hall of Fame, also getting some action in the sports world. We'll talk about that. Awesome. Voicemail. I love it. I love when people don't respond after saying they're good to respond. Nonetheless, I'm going to pull up some stuff about the Baseball Hall of Fame. Of course, that's making news. Of course, if you're a baseball fan, you're always interested in the Hall of Fame, and Hall of Fames across the sports world are always kind of bathed in controversy. And the baseball one especially, because baseball such a, you know, has a history of, you know, controversy. I mean, every sport does. Every person has a history of controversy, especially public figures, especially sports stars, especially professional athletes. But Baseball Hall of Fame is always mired in and bogged down in controversy. But that's kind of the appeal of being a sports fan, is being passionate about the hits and the misses and the inclusions and the disinclusions of Hall of Fames. As we're getting him back on the line here, as I kind of set up a Baseball Hall of Fame, is he on the line? Try again. Is he on the line?
Oh,
there we go.
He sure is.
He is on the line. This is, of course, a fairly common caller into our station. This is Jackson Lee, of course, a friend of mine. Of course, he's up in Sudbury. He does CKLU Sports Show. So it's always fun to have a host of one sports show join a host of another sports show. And topic of the conversation as we got you on the line here was the Baseball Hall of Fame. Of course, some look like locks this year. Some might even fall off the ballot. Of course, voters need to vote a player above 5% through all the ballots to keep them on the ballot for next year. There are some at risk of falling off. Notably, one of the key Blue Jays members of the mid-2010s Blue Jays teams, Russell Martin, the back catcher, is projected to fall off the ballot. Do you think that do you think Russell Martin's a Hall of Fame player or no?
Well, it's not even a matter of projected to fall off the ballot. He already has fallen off the ballot. And it's he only receiving, I believe, it was 3.5 or 4% of the votes, which to me, not only just as a Blue Jays fan, but as a fan of baseball entirely, is just a complete travesty. I think if you look at the history of the position throughout, like, you know, modern times, historically, whatever, you got to put Russell Martin's name in the conversation with these guys that to many people seem like complete Hall of Fame locks. This past year, we saw Joe Mauer, Minnesota Twins catcher and first baseman, get in his first season in the ballot. And to me, I like that pick, but I look at a guy like Russell Martin who brings so much value to the defensive side of the catcher position, probably the most important defensive position on the field. And I look at why a guy like Mauer, who was very good offensively, but on the defensive side of things, he certainly wasn't as good. But he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Martin falls off the ballot. So it's very confusing to me to see, like, you know, why that happened.
Of course, getting into the Baseball Hall of Fame, of course, it was announced just 3 days ago. Ichiro Suzuki, which got 99.7% of the vote. I think there's exactly one voter who left Ichiro off his ballot, and can we revoke his voting privileges? As Ichiro Suzuki just deserves to get 100% of the votes. What an icon, especially, you know, starting late into his career. I think he only joined the Mariners like 26 or 27, Suzuki. It's just a travesty he does not get the full 100%. Of course, you know, media writers and sports writers always have to be quirky and not vote for the, you know, oh, look at me, I didn't vote for the popular vote. But they did a popular vote for a reason. Cheers, Suzuki. Should have got 100 votes or 100% of the votes. Makes me mad that he did not. CC Sabathia, 86.8% of the votes. He also gets in, also on his first go around into the Hall of Fame. Terrific pitcher, broken pitcher in the MLB games. Always like picking him. And Billy Wagner gets in his 10th and final year of eligibility. So Suzuki, Sabathia, and Wagner make it into the Hall of Fame. Jackson, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think when you're looking at a guy like Ichiro, and I heard what you said, and I hate to contradict you on your own show, but
Did I say something was wrong? What did I say?
Well, you didn't say anything wrong. It is, of course, a matter of opinion. But if I had a vote, and this may be
you would not vote for Suzuki? That is...
It's not that I wouldn't. It's not that I wouldn't vote.
Okay, okay.
It's
I'll hear you out.
I don't... If there is someone out there who deserves 100% of the votes, I would say it's not him.
Who?
I think there are so many better candidates that have not. If we look in past years, you look at guys like Ken Griffey Jr. You look at guys like Adrian Beltre. You look at guys, so many people. I think the only two, or the only one actually, that's ever had 100% of the vote is Yankees closer Mariano Rivera. And while I do like that pick even, I just think there are so many better options for this sort of thing. You look at guys like Andrew Jones, who haven't even made it into the Hall of Fame yet, despite being the best defensive center fielder the league has ever seen. And, you know, I'm back on this whole defense thing. Maybe I overvalue it a little bit. I certainly value it a lot more than most of the Hall of Fame voters. But we look at some of these legends of the game who have not been 100% of the vote that absolutely should have been, some legends of the game that haven't even made it into the Hall. And we're talking about Ichiro Suzuki, who, mind you, legendary player in his own right. But if we look at his statistics, especially if we look at his, you know, post-age 30 season, because he only really spent 4 years in his 20s playing in Major League Baseball, the stats really do not jump off the page at me.
But his, okay, he's a baseball Hall of Fame, and his work in Japan is legendary. And he's still, again, joining the league in his late 20s, still past the 3,000 hit club. He still set a single season record of 262 hits, 2004, 311 career batting average, won the Rookie of the Year, won an MVP on the AL, 10-time All-Star, Gold Glover. I think Suzuki is one of those players. And also like an icon of Japanese baseball. I think his playing career deserves a Hall of Fame, but I also think he's just an image and like one of the very few baseball players who like everyone knows on a first-name basis. I think that passes him. He's that illustrious, like, get all the votes stage. But again, you do mention Rivera, of course, the only person to ever get into the Hall of Fame on 100% of the votes. Of course, Derek Jeter, too, missing out on one vote a couple years ago. So he's tied with Suzuki on missing only one vote. Jeter, too, I expect, should also have just gotten all of the votes, 100% of the votes. Again, the Yankees icon, Derek Jeter. Ken Griffey Jr. missing out on 3. You mentioned Ken Griffey Jr. I agree, too. Ken Griffey probably should have made it 100%. Of course, he was like a 7-8-time silver slugger. He spent like 20-plus years in the league, got an MVP, a lot of fake, you know, maybe 2 or 3 50-plus homer campaigns. Ken Griffey Jr., I also agree, should have got it. But maybe that's a discussion of Baseball Hall of Fame and how they're voted on and how, you know, I don't know. It seems like some of the votes were a bit sketch. Of course, again, to reiterate, Suzuki, Sabathia, and Wagner getting into the Hall of Fame. Carlos Beltran did not reach the 75% echelon. Carlos Beltran this year for the Baseball Hall of Fame only got 70%. A-Rod, 37.1%. He seems like he's typically just around that 30 to 40% range due to the steroid controversy. Felix Hernandez at 20%. In his first year of eligibility. Pedroia, I'm a big Pedroia fan, only 11.9% of the votes. I really like Pedroia. Do I think he's a Hall of Fame player? Probably not. But again, dropping off the ballot, some notable names. Russell Martin, we talked about. Ian Kinsler, I like Ian Kinsler a lot. Only again, 2.5% of the vote. Again, is Kinsler a Hall of Fame player? Probably not. Troy Tulowitzki did end up getting 4 votes. Of course, that one accounts for 1% of the vote, and he would drop off the ballot. Any, I want to get your thoughts here on kind of the steroid class of Baseball Hall of Fame. Do you think the likes of A-Rod, Alex Rodriguez, do you think they belong in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, absolutely. I see, again, this is where my opinion differs from that of baseball writers, and I think it's definitely a tricky one, because you see guys like David Ortiz, who is another complete first ballot Hall of Famer, who himself had some steroid controversies in his career, but through his character, you know, his time working in MLB media has seemed to sort of created a better name for himself amongst the baseball writers across America. Whereas a guy like Alex Rodriguez, while he is in the process of doing that, I feel like between his character while he was playing and the steroid controversies, especially the covering up of said steroid controversies, which is, I think, part of why guys like Barry Bonds and Sammy Sosa aren't going to be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, if you look at them, like if you look at these players, even before the steroids, like if you look at Barry Bonds is my favorite example, because he is far and away the greatest baseball player to ever pick up a bat. He truly is. And he would be the best baseball player ever if he didn't pick up a bat. I mean, he's 400 on base percentage, like 120 intentional walks in 2003. Just absolutely ridiculous numbers that we will never see again. But there's the steroid issue. But I would have people look at, he was, I want to believe or say it was 1994 he went over the San Francisco Giants. And it's fairly well established that that's when he started using steroids, or at least regularly. During his career with the Pittsburgh Pirates, he still racked up a very, very good Hall of Fame career in those 7-8 years before he ever started using steroids. So I think with a guy like that, you could absolutely make an argument. But when you get into the Sammy Sosas and the Mark McGuires and the Alex Rodriguezes, who really don't have that kind of disconnect, there really isn't any way you could justify it. They are cheaters at the end of the day. And I feel like that sort of thing would reflect poorly on the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's tough because you want to kind of keep up your reputation as being like for pure athletes of the Hall of Fame. But again, those players, I mentioned Barry Bonds, you know, the likes of that, like purely statistics. Yeah, they used performance enhancing drugs. So there's no two ways about it. But they were good baseball players. You mentioned Barry Bonds, of course, before going on those PEDs, was an excellent player. And so that is an interesting conversation there. Of course, we saw this is – no, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it also is interesting because it calls into question, like, how you – or how, as a baseball writer who gets to vote on these things, how you're going to look at these cheating scandals. I mean, in a couple of years, probably 10 years down the line, Jose Altuve is going to end up on a Hall of Fame ballot. It's going to happen, and he's going to get votes. The question is, and we see it with Carlos Beltran, because his thing too was that he was a big part of this Astros cheating scandal, much more than pretty much anybody else on that team. And that's affecting him and his vote getting. Now, I don't think he would be a Hall of Famer even without that, but it's worth noting.
That's a good segue, because I was about to ask you about Beltran. Of course, only 5% away from the vote in his third year, but he's a very interesting case because, like, as much as he is a very good, solid player, he is tied to the Astros scandal. And do you think he will get over the hump, or do you think he will just remain out of the fame, out of the hall?
Well, under normal circumstances, I would absolutely say that, yeah, this guy is not getting in. I don't think people, because you said he's what, 70% of the vote right now? Yeah, so he's, again, I liked him when he was playing. You were talking about like MLB 2K8 legend on the Mets. Love Carlos Beltran, but it's really hard to look past these, you know, these allegations and the fact that he was a cheater. But, and this is a very, very important but, I'm looking ahead to next year's ballot. And all due respect to these players that are on this ballot, there's not a lot there that feel like shoe-in, because every year it seems like we've had a David Ortiz or an Ichiro who are like, okay, everyone, like these guys are getting in. I'd say other than a Cole Hamels, really next year there isn't a lot. So that's going to leave writers and voters with, okay, I've only got, you know, two guys just coming onto the ballot who I'm going to vote for. What am I doing with the rest of my ballot? Well, maybe I'll vote for an Andrew Jones. Maybe I'll vote for Carlos Beltran just to not leave my ballot empty. And I feel like there's enough people out there in that situation or with that mindset to get Beltran into, you know, the Hall of Fame.
That's a very interesting conversation. Again, it's like 70%, he has like 7 more years on the ballot. He's just 5% away. And you can probably see Beltran maybe next year, maybe next couple of years, when there's a weak year. You just kind of need a name to fill out a ballot. I can see a lot of writers just throwing Beltran on just to, you know, finish their work. And with that being said, it is getting closer to 2, so we will let go of our caller. Of course, Jackson Lee, you do your own sports show. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, it's Laurentian University Radio, CKLU, up here in Sudbury, Ontario. We talk a lot about the same sort of thing as Golden Bowl. We talk about a lot of hockey and baseball and football and, you know, playoff predictions and trades, rumors and all the fun nitty-gritty stuff that we get into. We have you, Ian, on fairly
sometimes. Sometimes I'm over there. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, our known OHL expert.
That's me.
That is you. But thank you very much for having me on. I always love, you know, Laurentian Sudbury Friday afternoon. There's not really much to do up here, so it's always great to hop on the channel and give my hot takes and get you upset about Ichiro.
It's good. Yeah, it's great to see. Always good to have Jackson on the call. Someone much more knowledgeable about different things than I am. Much more a baseball guy than I am. Always have good to have our baseball and analyst on the line as we say goodbye to Jackson, of course, host of CKLU's of Laurentian University Sports Show. This is Laurier Sports Show, and he does Laurentian Sports Show. Great to have him on the call. As I think we'll start wrapping it up here. I'm pretty sure there's a show on after us, and I'd hate to make them wait like I waited. Nonetheless, this has been Golden Bowl. Just to recap sports happenings for Laurier teams, of course. Men's hockey, they lost yesterday. I went on a rant for the first like 10 minutes of the show, so if you want to go back and listen to that, feel free. Not a good game, not a good season. Disappointing team. Women's basketball, they're on a 3-game win streak into tonight. They play tonight at home, Athletic Complex Gym at 6 p.m. versus the visiting University Ave rivals, Waterloo Warriors. Laurier 7-8 coming into this game, Waterloo 6-8. That's number 4 and 5 in the West. Laurier wants to get some wins, and they win tonight. They're back up to 500 and extend their win streak to 4 games. After that, 8 p.m. also at home at the Athletic Complex Gym on campus. Check it out. Men's basketball, their 3-game win streak was cut short last game against UFT as they visited Toronto on Wednesday. They play tonight again at 8 p.m. versus the visiting Waterloo Warriors. Laurier 6-9, Waterloo 5-9 going into tonight's game for the men's programs. 3-4. In the West, both teams look to pile on some wins in a fairly weak West division, so they might be able to scrape into the playoffs there. Women's hockey, 11-6-0-1 record, 30 points. They're fourth in the West. They play tonight at Western. After beating Western at home, now they go into Western. Will be a home game for the Mustangs. Western, bottom of the West. They beat, or they lost to Laurier 5-1 last weekend. So women's hockey looking to keep up that momentum as they headed tonight against Western. You catch that OUA TV, and Radio Laurier will host the basketball games. And again, the women's hockey team also plays tomorrow night too, also on OUA TV. That's a road game against Windsor. As return to your regular scheduled program. Thanks for hopping in on this rather messy Golden Bowl, but that's okay. It's all fun. We love talking sports. We love having you listening in. Thank you very much. My name's Ian Bailey from the Radio Laurier Studio. Have a great rest of your day and a great weekend, too.